This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show. You're listening to an exclusive podcast of The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, heard every Saturday morning at 9 on Zoomer Radio, the new AM 740. You're listening to an exclusive podcast of The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, heard every Saturday morning at 9 on Zoomer Radio, the new AM 740. Welcome, friend, to our weekly garden party. We hope you brought along your questions, because it's time to dish the dirt. On The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, exclusively on Zoomer Radio.
And a good morning, one and all. A little cloudy right now. I just glanced out there. I thought, I'm going to look at the sunshine, Charlie, and son of a gun, it's cloudy.
I think it's going to thin out as the day goes on. It's going to be a nice day.
Okay.
No rain in the forecast, that much
that
we know.
That is good, because a lot of stuff requires half-decent weather.
There's going on.
Holy mackerel. Yeah. Let me clear the decks then
sure.
And get the phone numbers on the air, et cetera. So here we go. If you would like to speak to Charlie Dobbin, who is our gardening guru here at the state. By all
goddess
means.
Goddess of the garden.
Goddess of the garden.
That.
Of course. Of course. here's the number. I knew I was going to get in trouble. In Toronto, 416-360-0740. And then anywhere in the province, toll free 1-866-740-4740. Call early, call often. One question per call. And if you happen to be a first-time caller, please let Sebastian know when you call in. Then he'll relay that message to me, and when you get to the air, well, just before you get on the air, you'll have that.
Yeah.
Your garden wings.
Garden wings.
Yeah.
Gotta love them. Okay, get ready, fasten your seatbelts. There's an awful lot going on in the gardening world, not to mention the sports world and the biking to raise money world. There's so much going on, but let's talk gardening. This weekend, today, and tomorrow is the 31st annual Through the Garden Gate Tour sponsored by the Toronto Botanical Gardens. 19 private gardens in the Winfields Estate area are open to all explorers. The TBG is close enough to be the headquarters for the tour, so head to 777 Lawrence Avenue East, corner of Leslie and Lawrence, and be wowed by master gardeners in every garden, shuttle buses and ice cream carts. You can also participate on a bicycle. So for more information, go to torontobotanicalgarden.com. And by the way, I will be attending that Through the Garden Gate tour tomorrow with a garden buddy of mine, a person I worked with way, way, way back in when I worked at White Rose Nurseries. Also going on this weekend, the Oshawa Peony Festival, 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. today and tomorrow, 155 Arena Street in Oshawa. Admission and parking is free. And get ready for Garden Days, starting next Saturday, June 16th, running to the 24th. There are lots of activities happening in every province across Canada. It's a 9-day program, activities, events, all designed for gardening enthusiasts, families, schools, and tourism as well. So Garden Days is an opportunity for Canadians to enjoy their own garden, visit or take part in their favorite garden experience, get inspired at their local garden center, or travel to a nearby destination to enjoy their favorite garden. So more information on Garden Days, obviously, www.gardendays.ca. But what you don't know, Frank, is that next Saturday, Sean James will be joining us here on the show. He is the national spokesperson for Garden Days. He's going to be here to tell us what's going on across the country and bring us up to date and then race out the door because he's got events to attend.
Very good.
Starting next Saturday. And the other special thing is that Bullfrog Power will be sponsoring the garden show next Saturday. So we're going to be 100% Bullfrog powered for 1 hour next Saturday with green electricity, all in support of Garden Days.
That?
Yeah, it's
good.
Pretty cool, eh? So for more information, obviously, on Bullfrog Power, that's at bullfrogpower.com. Mark your calendars if you want to see me live in person June 20th at the Thornhill Horticultural Society, 7:30 p.m., Great Gardens with Less Water, Thornhill Community Center, 7755 Bayview Avenue in Thornhill. Mm-hmm. And the following day, June 21st, I'm at the Tottenham Horticultural Society in the Fire Hall, 7:30 p.m. The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly is my topic. I love some of these. I wonder if I'll get to like speak from a fire truck or something. I'm in the fire hall. Or maybe ride the pole or something.
Oh, yeah.
Because, you know, this past, don't go there, this past spring, I was in a court house on the, you know, up on the whatever they call it. Just, I can't look at you. And I was also in a church in Brooklyn where I was standing in the pulpit delivering my sermon. No, my seminar. So, yes, I'm looking forward to the fire hall and what's that? What that's all about.
Right. Oh,
now,
my God.
Throw it to you.
Are we just about done now? Okay.
We are, yeah.
Literally and figuratively
pretty much,
speaking.
Yes.
You got that was an image that was just not escaping my mind.
I can see that on your face, yes.
All right. Give a call to Charlie. Help us out here because we're just failing badly at this very moment in time. Anyway, we're going to have a darn good show, and we want you lined up. In fact, I know Art in North York is waiting to speak with you momentarily here on The Garden Show from Zoomer Radio.
Daffodils and daisies, bluebells and begonias, forsythia and foxgloves, marigolds, magnolia, lavender and lupins, dahlias, delphiniums, stocks, fox, hollyhocks, tulips and sweet williams.
You've picked the right place for everything floral. This is The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, exclusively on Zoomer Radio.
Ah, the fun is happening. It's all happening right here
Never
on Zoomer Radio.
Never a dull moment on The Garden Show.
You've got it right, my love. Okay, there's Art in North York. Not New York, but North York. Hey, Art, how are you doing this morning?
Good morning.
New York. How are you doing?
Oh, good.
My question is, what's the best way of getting rid of a tree stump? Small tree stump? I was going to drill a hole in the center and put some gasoline there and let it soak through and then burn it out.
Except don't use gasoline. How close is it to your house?
Oh, it's about 50 feet.
Oh, well. Yeah.
So you're right. You're on the right track. There is a product. Now, Mike, one question is it available in Canada? It used to be available in Canada. It is called Stump Remover.
Yeah, but that takes 3 or 4 years before it's does any good.
Oh, really?
No, but it works on the same principle as what you're suggesting. You drill the largest holes that you can in the stump.
Yeah.
It's potassium nitrate. You pour in the potassium nitrate. You let it sit there for, you know, a week or two. Then you use kerosene. You pour kerosene into your drilled holes. Then you light it. And it smolder burns as opposed to, you know,
flaming. Flame, yeah.
But, of course, you never do that near any other wooden structures, you know, homes, fences, et cetera, other trees. But it is a reasonably quick way to eliminate a stump, and not wait for it to just rot away. There are, of course, machines, stump grinders, which is just like a chainsaw, really. You cut the tree stump level with the earth, and then the stump grinder just grinds down the depth of the chain, which is usually about 8 inches below surface level.
Which should
level.
Be enough.
Yeah, and then you can fill back in with soil and saw it or whatever it is you want to do there. Stump grinding does work very well, and of course it's chemical-free.
Well, they can be rented too, I'm sure, the rental places.
I think Home Depot rents, Stevenson's Rental probably rents stump grinders, and many companies will do it for you as well. So, but I just hesitate to go. I wouldn't recommend the gasoline thing, just because it might be a little volatile. Yeah, it's a cherry stump.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I just avoid the volatility is what I would suggest. So that's why I like the idea of the stump remover with the kerosene rather than gasoline.
Okay.
And plus the toxicity.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, gee, yeah.
Well,
you're right.
But it's you really
cheaper to buy dynamite.
But your soil ends up very toxic, right? Yeah. You're going to have trouble regrowing in that area.
Let us know what method you decided to use and how it worked. Okay, Art?
Yeah. Okay.
Thank you. Thanks.
Thank you. Thanks for
the call. Fun way to start blowing up a stump.
Exactly. Good way to start the weekend.
Hey,
let's wreak havoc somewhere.
there's Doreen on the line. Good morning, Doreen.
Good morning.
Good morning.
How do you grow carrots without those little white worms?
You've obviously had them in the past?
Terrible.
Oh dear.
Really?
Years ago, I didn't.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. So often when we get a pest into our garden, particularly a soil-based pest, they stay. They're just too, it's too happy of a place for them to ever leave, particularly if we keep feeding them by planting carrots. So what I would...
carrots vicious. In different locations.
Yeah, I know. But
vicious circle.
Probably the movement of the soil has allowed... It's a maggot,
oh,
right?
Yes.
And there was, back in the day, you know, 10, 15, 20 years ago, we would use an like a powdered insecticide in the soil as we were planting our carrot seeds.
Yes, I did.
And that was a way to control them in around the carrots for that period of time. But those insecticides are no longer available. Plus, I think we're a little hesitant with our edibles to, you know, be sort of using sort of toxic chemicals right up close to our edible, you know, grow plants. So I would suggest take a break from carrots, go move somewhere totally different with your carrots. I'm just trying to think if there's any. I mean,
I put them in a different garden even.
Yeah, you did, eh?
But it didn't help.
Followed you. Okay, well, you know, you're going to have to leave that with me because at this point, I don't know other than I need to think about that. It might just be you have to take a couple of years off and the insects will move on for lack of food, but there might be something else out there. So Doreen, keep listening and in the next break, I'll quickly see what I can search out on carrot.
Thank you very much.
Control.
Okay, my love. Thank you.
Bye.
All
righty.
Thank you.
And just before we take a little break, Charlie, you and I giving a wave to a lot of folks who are on bikes over this weekend heading to Niagara Falls, the Enbridge Ride to Conquer Cancer. Yeah.
Is it called? Yeah, it is called. They just
I
left.
Believe so.
Quite a large traffic jam on my
I
way
know.
Here coming up from the CNE. They left. Yeah. They were leaving at 9 o'clock. Was it 9 or 8? I think it's 8 o'clock. One of my students, my Humber College students, who I'm currently teaching, is riding.
Wow.
On that. And
that's
so he was telling
like a
me.
200 kilometers.
Yeah, he
jaunt.
Said, well, they get to Hamilton, is the theory tonight, and sleep like little lambs, and then they're back on their bikes and off to Niagara tomorrow. He said, but it is so organized.
Yeah.
He said, you know, you by registering for the ride, he works for Steam Whistle. Breweries and they've got a team riding. So he
well,
said,
"Well, I'll drink to that."
Yeah. So he said that they register. They have a little license on their bikes by registering.
Yep.
He said, "When you ride into Hamilton, you basically just hand your bike to a volunteer, and then you go
it's all
to sleep.
So well done,
and your bike is completely looked after. You don't have to go worry about locking it up, and keeping
like
it safe.
That's
it's
wonderful.
All super well organized
and millions raised.
Yeah,
over this
It's one of their biggest fundraisers.
Okay, we got to take a break, and I know Sophie in Hamilton is." Just dying to get on the phone with you, so we'll let that all happen momentarily here on The Garden Show from Zoomer Radio.
Don't change stations just because the weather changes. Garden tips and advice all year round. This is The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, exclusively on Zoomer Radio.
And Charlie, you've been diligently working
the
computer there.
As you're talking to me and totally distracting me, I have just been trying to come up with some
job.
Ideas for Doreen. Doreen called a few minutes ago from Belgrave wondering about the maggots that chew on her carrots. All right, so here's the scoop, Doreen. And you know what? This is a pretty good little website. It's actually Planet Natural. So planetnatural.com, how to control what are actually root maggots. Okay, female, so you've got to understand life cycles here. So the adult of the insect that burrows into your carrots is actually a fly. So the female lays eggs and is very attracted to where you've just planted the seeds, likes all that moist soil. Mm-hmm. So first thing is you're planting your carrot seeds. Hopefully you haven't planted them yet or you've just planted them. So the instant you plant your carrot seeds, moisten them as you would normally, then get yourself something called a floating row cover. It's like muslin or, you know, it's this soft so it allows a light in.
A little bit of netting.
Exactly. And you're going to apply that over where you've planted your carrot seeds, which is going to protect the carrot seeds from the female fly laying its eggs right beside the seeds. That's number one.
Gotcha.
So cover right away. Make sure your cover extends at least 6 inches beyond your row of carrot seeds. You're also going to, once the seeds germinate, you are going to get out some diatomaceous earth, which is a sharp little particles, though it looks like white powder to us. Hmm. Buy it at any garden center. You're going to sprinkle diatomaceous earth around your newly germinated seedlings.
Diatomaceous earth. What the heck is that?
It's from diatoms, and diatoms are ocean creatures that have died and are made of calcium. So they're really, really sharp.
Gotcha.
So, it's just called diatomaceous earth because it's one of those sharp things that
slugs and all
any
that sort of
larva,
stuff.
Any slug, any animal that belly is in contact with the soil, will move across diatomaceous earth and, of course, lacerate their tummies and lose all their innards. Very effective. So floating row covers, then diatomaceous earth. Consider the yellow sticky attractive little cards, which are available under the name Sticky Sticks. Get those out and around your vegetable crops to capture any of the adults that are flying around. And from that point forward, it's basically, you know, monitor, keep an eye. First sign of any problems, of course, remove any carrots that appear to have maggots, but try and prevent the problem by preventing the eggs being laid. Okay.
Okay. Excellent. Excellent.
There we go.
All worth waiting for there, that question from Doreen.
Yeah.
Now, from Hamilton, you are Sophie's choice this morning.
I love that.
To speak to. Hey, Sophie, good morning. Welcome to the show.
Good morning to both of you.
Good morning.
Hi, Charlie. I can hardly hear you, but here's my question.
Okay.
I have a hydrangea. It's about 5 years old. It's grown beautifully. It's very healthy. But I need to transplant it. Hmm. So I'm wondering, what kind of root does it have? Would I have a difficulty removing it from the area? And when is the best time to transplant it?
So what kind of soil do you garden in? Is it a clay soil or a sandy soil?
I've worked with my soil, and it's kind of a little bit of both.
Okay, so that's good. All right, 5 years is not that long, so it is possible to transplant that hydrangea. However, your best time to transplant it is not now. It's either early spring or September for best chance of survival. So fall or spring, not when it's actively growing like it is now.
Okay, so when it's springtime, before the leaves come on,
that would be best if you can, or just as the leaves are starting to emerge. I mean, what I would do if I was transplanting it next spring, for example, mm-hmm. have the spot ready where you're going. Pre-dig the hole, have that all prepared. Now, back to your hydrangea plant. Of course, we trim them down. I'm assuming this is one of the ones with the ball-shaped flowers.
Yes.
Macrophylla. So we always have a lot of dead wood up on the tips, and all our new growth typically comes from the base.
Yes.
So trim it right down so the whole plant is maybe 2 inches tall, 3 inches tall at the most, all those stems right down, then dig the largest root ball that you can. You know you're going to sever roots. There's no way you're bringing them all with you, but dig the largest root ball that you can that will you'll be able to handle, to physically be able to lift up out of the ground and over to the new spot and down into the ground carefully, trying to keep the soil attached to the roots in the process. So make sure it's thoroughly moistened before you even attempt this job. Also have on hand either bone meal or a transplanter fertilizer just to encourage fresh roots to grow right away when you get it planted. Of course, you will water thoroughly at that time when you do replant it. And, you know, make sure it's a good quality soil you're going into. It's a well-drained, fairly fertile soil.
Okay. And it does need water quite a bit, doesn't it?
Yeah, that's that hydra. That's where hydrangea comes from. They like their water, yeah.
Okay.
Okay. Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Yeah, my pleasure.
You, Sophie. Thanks for joining us here on a Saturday morning from Zoomer Radio, where we're broadcasting live and direct from the Zoomerplex in Liberty Village in Toronto, just around the corner, maybe, is Siva. Good morning, Siva.
Good morning, guys.
Good morning.
My question is, will adding horticultural lime to tomatoes give it the required amount of calcium it needs?
Okay, so good question. You're obviously concerned that lack of calcium leads to a horrible...
The rot.
Yeah, it's called blossom end rot, where we lose the tomatoes at the blossom end. Mm-hmm. And it was all sort of put down to lack of calcium. So what has been learned over the years is that in Ontario, our soils are limestone-based. We rarely have a shortage of calcium in our soil. As a matter of fact, it's so rare, be unheard of, for there to be a lack of calcium in a natural Ontario soil. However, what does happen is if we have inconsistent access to moisture for the tomato plants, then the calcium becomes limiting. So instead of worrying about adding lime, which is going to mess up your pH anyway, unless for some reason your pH is super low and you want to bring it up, I wouldn't add lime right off the top. What I would do is add good quality organic material. Make sure you've wherever your tomatoes are going, you've got good manure or homemade compost, that kind of quality organic material, which will help with moisture retention.
Okay.
Consider mulching your tomatoes with a couple of inches of a chopped up bark mulch or any kind of a mulch that you've got good access to. So again, moisture retention. And remember that if we don't get, you know, rain, and it's hot July weather and a couple days goes with no rain and it's windy and hot and sunny and you know that the moisture is disappearing out of the soil, be prepared to get out there and water those tomatoes. And I think you'll find you will. And also, tomatoes are what we call heavy feeders. So you could certainly consider a synthetic fertilizer, and a tomato food always has extra calcium in it as well.
Okay. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye, Siva. Thanks for joining us here on a Saturday morning. It's The Garden Show on Zoomer Radio in Sunderland, Ontario. There's Cheryl. Good morning, Cheryl.
Hello.
Good morning.
Good morning. Charlie, I'm having a problem with chipmunks digging up my soil in the pots, and they're eating my bulbs. They're a big calla lily of some kind. I had trouble last year, but not like this year. And I believe I kind of remember you mentioning some kind of a homemade thing I could put on it so they wouldn't do it.
Well, it's interesting you mention that. Actually, you're right.
I can't hear you.
When Sean James was here, he did share with us a recipe, and it had to do with eggs. Okay, I'm going to just flip back in my book again. This happens every now and then. Oh, there it is. So this is a way to try and keep squirrels or chipmunks from going after any of your plants or digging up things that like bulbs. And the recipe was 2 eggs.
Pardon?
2 eggs.
Two. I can't hear you.
All right, tell you what. I'm going to just keep... Why don't you maybe hang up the phone, turn up your radio, and then grab a pencil, and there you go.
Okay, I'll hang up the phone and go turn the radio up, and I'll be able to hear you.
Yeah, exactly.
That's right, darling.
I appreciate that, dear.
Thanks,
thank you
Cheryl.
So much.
All righty.
I don't know why that happens sometimes.
I have no idea either.
I can hear myself.
Yes, and I can
Sebastian,
hear you.
Can you hear me?
Thank goodness.
Sebastian, can you hear me?
Yeah,
you
can. We're all cool.
Okay, Cheryl, got your pencil? So here, this is something that Sean James recommended as a good repellent for those little critters. And there's other ways to also repel, but this is his idea. Two eggs. 2 cups of milk. 2 tablespoons of olive oil, plus a dash of dish soap. So it's quite the mix, right? Add this whole mix, you know, 2 eggs, 2 cups of milk, 2 tablespoons of olive oil, some dish soap into 2 liters of water. Mix it all around. You can also sprinkle in a little cayenne pepper if you like, and then spray your plants that these animals are chewing and digging and bothering you to the dripping point. So this stuff's going to drip off. He claims that will last on the plants for up to a month, because that egg makes it sticky. So
that makes sense, doesn't it? Yeah.
Bad smells and eggs and, I don't know, I can't think of a smell very good to us, eggs and milk sitting on plants, but whatever. This is a Sean James thing. I'm a big fan, if chipmunks and squirrels are digging in your pots, go to the dollar store, get a bag of forks, cheap forks, plastic forks.
Oh, yeah.
Stick them into the pot.
The prongs up.
Tines up. Yeah. Exactly. You can even break off the handles if you want, but handles down, tines up, down, so that they're below ground. Just below ground. You don't see them, but they're there. And any little digging creature can't dig. You have to stick a lot in there.
Yeah, just remember yourself that you planted it, because you don't want to be jamming
yourself.
Yeah.
Sometimes even cut rose canes on the surface of the soil will slow them down. So those are, you know, deterrents to just make it a little bit of an unfriendly place for chipmunks and squirrels and digging creatures.
All righty. And my friends, you're tuned to Zoomer Radio, The Garden Show on the Air with Charlie Dubin, yours truly, Frank Proctor, the sous chef of the garden, saying hi to Carol in Ayton. Hi, Carol.
Good morning.
Good morning. Where's Ayton?
Ayton, a little bit northwest of Mount Forest.
Oh,
there,
lovely.
Yeah. We're about halfway in between.
Yeah, nice.
Just a comment on the slugs in the carrots. The old timers around here used to use wood ashes and just sprinkle them around either in the row before you sowed the seeds or on top. I remember that one.
Well, I wonder why that would work.
A lot of potassium there. Wouldn't it?
Smell, taste, who knows? Anyway, my question this morning is, when you're mulching trees, when I'm putting mulch around trees, somewhere in the last couple of weeks, my husband and I were touring around, and I don't remember what town or city it was, but they had mulch around the trees, and it looked to be up like a foot and a half the trunk of the trees. It didn't look particularly attractive.
I
wondered if it was healthy for the trees to put that much.
No, you never want to cover the bark of the tree with, because it'll hold moisture against the bark and cause
and
all kinds of rot. And listen to you, Frank's the garden expert.
That was kind of my memory that you weren't to do that.
No.
What about slugs? Does it attract slugs to be on the trees, to crawl up the trees, or is that not a problem?
Well, slugs like the dark and they like the moisture.
Right?
So they will always hang out. And that has always been one of the negatives of mulch, is that we do provide a bit of a hotel or a rest, you know, nice, comfortable spot for some of the pests that we don't really like slugs, earwigs, that sort of thing. But when it comes to mulching trees, remember there's two ways to do it. One is the mountain, like you're talking about, so straight up the trunk. The other is the volcano. So the volcano is where we take that same amount of mulch, we put it around the trunk of the tree, but it's a crater, so that the trunk comes out of the crater.
Mm-hmm.
And what's good about the volcano design is that when the rain falls, the rain drips down the trunk and down to the root zone and gets trapped within that crater.
Okay.
The mountain design takes the water away from the trees and rots the stems, not to mention the bark.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much.
You're very welcome.
Thank you. We've got time for another call here.
Do we? Okay.
Take a next break.
Well, you can take this one, okay? You've been jumping in and doing so good on the last few.
Yeah. Shut my mouth.
No, keep going.
Valerie in Etobicoke, good morning.
Good morning to you all.
Good morning.
I've had some trouble with a mandevilla plant. I've got about five of them, very healthy, some outside, a couple inside. But none of them are flowering like the beautiful ones we see in nurseries.
Yeah, and you've kept these for a few years, obviously?
Two or three, not that long.
Well, good for you for overwintering them. You're doing something very right. Okay, so what have they done in the greenhouses? They've had the optimal conditions to get those mandevilla to bloom. They've had maximum light, proper temperature, perfect nutrition, and high humidity in the greenhouse, so that when you see them for sale in the garden centers, they look absolutely phenomenal. So yours, you've obviously done a very good job because you've gotten them through our tough winters for tropical plants. So now your job is to try and mimic what the perfect conditions. So have you done any fertilizing on these plants?
Yes, I have.
And what are you fertilizing with? The reason I ask, just make sure that it is a fertilizer that is designed to encourage flowers.
Yes.
So make sure it's not like an all-purpose fertilizer, but instead is a, flower power, flowering. So
I think it is an all-over.
Yeah, so it'll usually have a higher middle number when it's designed to really encourage flowers. So use that kind of a fertilizer. Make sure you're maximizing light so that the ones that are outside, great idea, perfect idea. If they're overgrown and all kind of stringy and viney from the winter and you don't see any evidence of buds, don't hesitate to do any pruning or cutting back, and the next growth should have flowers on it, is the sort of theory behind that.
Cut back the vines.
Yeah, if they're really leggy and out of control.
Valerie, what's your dog's name?
Charlie.
Charlie, thank Charlie for being part of our show.
Oh,
I love dogs.
She's a
that's great.
One.
She's cute.
Sorry about that.
No worries. That's great.
All right. And otherwise, I assume you have them in bright light now?
Yes, I do.
Okay, you know what? Get out a little mister bottle. If our humidity levels aren't as high as we'd like them, feel free to do whatever you can. Raise that humidity around the plants. They are tropical plants. They do love the heat, the high humidity, the bright lights, and good nutrition.
Great. Well, we'll try all those things.
Okay.
All right.
How often should I fertilize?
At the most, every 2 weeks.
2 weeks, yes, that's what I've been doing.
Through to the end of July, no more after that.
Well, there we had
thank you.
Firm proof positive that the show has gone to the dogs.
Yeah.
Charlie, welcome.
I can't
anytime.
Tell you how many dogs I have met named Charlie.
Isn't that
it's a
right?
really popular name.
Well.
Have you ever met a dog named Frank?
No.
Well, there you go.
No, I haven't.
But I mean, it's a popular name for dogs. That's all I'm saying. There's a lot of people have dogs named Charlie.
Sounds like you just kicked yourself in the shin here.
Just saying.
Okay, Charlie.
It's kind of
very good. We have a couple of lines open. Let me repeat the phone numbers before we take a break, okay? In Toronto, call 416-360-0740. Anywhere in the province, toll free, 1-866-740-4740. Back in a moment.
Fur and feathers and bugs of all size. There's more going on in the garden than you realize. Should small creatures become a big problem, then you've got The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin. Exclusively on Zoomer Radio.
Hey, Charlie, let's move to Markham. All right.
Okay.
Hey, there's Kathy. Good morning, Kathy.
Good morning, Frank. Good morning, Charlie.
Good morning.
I have a problem with my cow.
Mm-hmm.
I notice a little green, small worms they eat in the leaves.
Yeah, so they're eating from the edges or eating holes in the middle?
Holes in the middle.
Yeah. Hmm. Not nice.
Not nice,
That's part we want to eat. We don't want to share that with them. And this kale, is it in pots or is it in the ground?
It's on the ground.
Okay. So there's a couple of things you can do. I mentioned when Doreen called about the carrot maggots that one of the ways to protect carrots, and this is true for kale as well, from insect infestation is with something called a floating row cover. So what you'd have to do is you'd go through the kale, you would hand pick off any evidence of the larva, which are those little worms, and you would squish those or drop them into just an empty tuna fish can with a little bit of water and a drop of oil, and they will die. So you would just clean up the plants, and then you would protect them with the floating row covers. If you've got too much kale or just too many insects or not enough time for that kind of work to do, there is a product. It's completely organic. It's actually a bacteria. It's on the shelves of any of the garden centers. And the on the shelf, or what you're looking for in terms of the active ingredient, is the letter B. So B, capital B, and a lowercase letter T. So B-T.
B-T.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And it stands for Bacillus, which is a bacteria, Bacillus thuringiensis. So most people can't remember Bacillus thuringiensis, so it's called BT. It's usually a powder, and on the package it'll tell you to mix with water. And when you that sprayed onto any of the larvae that are eating our plants that we do not want eating our plants, will kill them, because the bacteria will actually invade the tissues of those little worms or larvae and kill them.
Okay.
But be careful that you are killing larvae that you really want to kill. So, you know, if they're little green ones and they're eating your kale, yes, you can look after them, because there are some real pests of kale. But just be careful that you're not killing larvae of some of the butterflies and that sort of thing.
Okay. Because we do have lots of bushes in the back.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know if it's from that or what it is.
Hard to say. You know, one of the things I have learned over all the years I've been in the garden and teaching about gardening is that happy plants, plants that are under no stress at all, so their soil is excellent, fertile, full of organic material, properly watered, you know, just fertility is available, just all the good things are happening for the plants, they are far less likely to be invaded by pests.
Okay, thank you. And I want to ask Frank what he did to the mystery flower.
Oh, yes. Oh, Kathy, hi. Of course, I looked at Markham and thought, I wonder if it is. And it is the lovely lady and gentleman.
With the geranium.
We've planted it out toward the back of the property, and it's come up beautiful purple flowers.
Yep.
And just gorgeous.
So that's interesting, because you gave me a pot too.
Thank you,
Kathy. And once Frank gave it to me, I was like, oh, I have this plant.
Oh, do you? Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I have it with the variegated form, with the leaves green and white. And you're right, blooms like crazy, sun or shade. So I saved the pot that Frank gave me. I'm going to take it to a friend out in Prince Edward County who has just installed a new garden by a stream. And I think it's going to be very pretty along there.
Thank you very much, Kathy.
Oh, very welcome.
Okay. Thanks a lot.
Righto.
Have a good Saturday.
Thank you
very much. Well, now we've learned something else. Bacillus thuringiensis. No,
Bacillus.
Bacillus thuringiensis.
Perfect.
Okay.
Oh,
wrote it down phonetically.
Say that three times fast.
Yeah, I'll have to practice for next week in case I get caught off guard. Speaking of getting caught off guard, here I am. Oh, yeah, okay. There's Warner.
Yes.
But you know what? We have to take a break right now. Otherwise, we're going to get into a jam here. Warner, hang tight, okay, there in Tilsonburg. We'll be right to you, my friend, here on The Garden Show.
Daffodils and daisies, bluebells and begonias, forsythia and foxgloves, marigolds, magnolia, lavender and lupins, dahlias, delphiniums, stocks, fox, hollyhocks, tulips and sweet williams.
You've picked the right place for everything floral. This is The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, exclusively on Zoomer Radio.
And I just glanced at my watch and darn things stopped. 20 to 7 this morning. I don't know what happened. Just the battery gave up the ghost.
Yeah, and they do that quite suddenly, it seems. Yep. Well, you know what? My alarm clock was acting up.
Uh-oh.
It was like jumping an hour ahead and jumping an hour back. And it was like,
that's good.
No kidding. So I went to bed last night going, I don't think I can risk this. Like, if I'm an hour late,
I'm in trouble.
It's going to be
I'm in trouble.
Exactly.
Unless every question's about nematodes.
So I took my cell phone to bed with me last night just to cover and make sure I had a working alarm.
Well, listen, we better get to Warner and Tilsonburg there. He's been waiting patiently on the line. Hi, good morning, Warner.
Good morning.
Morning.
Charlie and Frank. It's about tomatoes.
Mm-hmm.
I planted about a half a dozen. This is going back a couple of years.
Mm-hmm.
And I put fat-free powdered milk in the bottom.
Okay.
I come out the next day. All the plants were pulled out, but not... I could replant them.
Mm-hmm.
There must have been a raccoon to get to the milk.
Yes.
Ooh, little devils, eh?
Yes.
So what I do now, I take a water bottle...
Mm-hmm.
Cut the bottom off, and of course, don't have the top off.
Right.
And dig it in, pointing right at the roots from the tomatoes.
Right.
And I put two teaspoons of powdered milk, fat-free, and one of Epsom salt.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And then I water it into the bottle, goes right to the roots.
Right.
They grow beautiful, no more problem. And I don't get any tomatoes with this black on the bottom.
Interesting.
Because calcium deficiency, that's what makes that.
That's what the blossom end rot. And, of course, Epsom salt is magnesium sulfate, which is also required for good tomato growth. Well, so just help me understand. So the bottom is cut out of the water bottle, so the spout is down into the ground.
Yeah, and pointing to the root.
Right. So that's just planted in the soil close to the tomato, or the tomato's actually planted into the bottom of the water bottle?
No, no. Yeah. It's close,
just close,
pointing,
right?
And I feed from the top.
Right, through that.
And then whenever I water, I go into that bottle.
Yeah, yeah.
And it feeds the tomato in the bottom. No more problem.
Huh, interesting. So they don't smell it because I guess it's somewhat encased in the plastic.
But yes, it is watered down.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Nice
and
idea.
The juice gets to the bottom of the tomatoes. Mm-hmm, never any problem. Beautiful, healthy plants.
All right.
There you go.
Well, I hope that Siva is listening because she had questions about getting calcium to her tomatoes. And this very, very good suggestion. Thank you.
I do that maybe once a week.
Yeah.
And then you come with the hose and you stick it in the bottle. It foams it all up and goes down.
Yeah.
No
there
problem.
You go.
Hey, yeah.
Terrific, Warner.
So you don't keep adding the milk and the Epsom salts throughout the season. You just water through that once a week.
No,
Oh, you keep adding every week. Wow.
2 teaspoons of fat-free powdered milk and one of Epsom salt in that bottle.
Phew, that's
another
a lot.
Use for Epsom salts. My gosh.
<I know. laughs> I'm writing this all
you,
down.
Warner.
Okay,
terrific.
Thank you.
Okay, guys.
All the best. Take care of Tilsonburg for us, would you?
And we love people who call in with good tips, so
you
thanks
betcha.
For that.
Now let's see what's on Jesse's mind here in Toronto. Good morning, Jesse.
Hi. Charlie, I always enjoy your program.
Thank you.
But I have a question about the amaryllis. Mm-hmm. I had beautiful amaryllis who had grown about 88 centimeters high.
Wow, yeah.
Anyway, now all the leaves have died off.
Mm-hmm.
And I have three amaryllis plants where the leaves are dying off. What do I do now? Put them in the basement already, or can I put them outside?
Okay, so when you say the leaves have died down, have you not watered them at all since they flowered, or have you been watering?
Oh, yeah, I have watered them.
Oh, wow, interesting. Because I have 5 very green amaryllis plants at my place that are very much full of foliage right now. I've got them outside just sitting in eastern side of the house, so they get an hour or so of light in the morning. But otherwise, they're still in their pots. They're just sitting there on the ground.
You have them outside?
Yes, I do.
And then, but then you put them in the basement or in the shed?
Yes, but first they have to fatten up again. So they need the green leaves to grow for a number of months in order for those bulbs to get fat enough to be beautiful again next winter. So what I would do with your bulbs right now is feel what they feel like. If they feel empty, they feel small, they feel shrunken, it might not work for you because there's no leaves on them. What you want is you want them to grow leaves back. You want them in the sun.
One is getting, I can see the leaves coming out again.
Okay, good. Yeah. So just get them outside. They don't need to be in a super bright spot. Just get them out into the real world. Water as necessary. Avoid overwatering. They'll rot.
How many times? Once a week?
Again, depending on the weather, right? It's just one of those things that allow the soil to dry between watering. So if it rains, you obviously don't need to water. If it doesn't rain for a week or so, then get some water on them. But you want those green leaves to be green and healthy, and you want those plants to grow all summer. At the end of August, that's when we're going to put them in the shed and stop watering. And that will cause the leaves to turn yellow at that time. But until then... at the end of August.
Yeah.
But until then, we water. We care for them just like a regular petunia.
Oh.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Okay,
and then
Jessie.
Put them in the basement.
Yep. After the leaves have died down, we put them away for September, October, November, whatever sort of makes sense. We pull them out and they should bloom again at that point with water then. But that's Christmas by that time or November.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Good stuff. Thank you.
Thank you, Jessie. Have we time, do you think, to check into a question from Carla in Orangeville? Let's give it a shot, okay? Hi, Carla.
Hi, Frank. Frank, I have a message for you.
Yes?
About Charlie and dog books and names of dogs. I wrote 7 books in Holland in my European days.
Uh-huh. No kidding.
And they're all called...
Whoop, hello?
They're all called... A dog named Frank. And there were 7 kids' books. So I just...
I love it.
Oh.
You know, I have a question about Rodos for Charlie. Yeah. You know, we have... I have Rodos and the pH of the soil is too high. How do I lower it?
Okay, at this time of year, it's a perfect time of year to do 2 things. One is get a hold of rhododendron food, very specific fertilizer for rhododendrons.
Yeah,
it has sulfur in it. It'll help lower the pH. Use as directed. And number 2, get a hold of something called soil acidifier.
Soil acidifier?
Yeah, and it'll be a granular form. It might be aluminum sulfate. Bottom line is it will be sulfur-based. So get a hold of that, and again, apply around the rhododendrons, and be prepared to do that every single spring as long as you want to keep those rhodos happy.
Now, Carla, before you scoot away on me, do you have a computer at home?
I have my cell phone. I don't have...
Oh, yeah, but you could send an email to me, could you?
Yes, I can.
I want to get that book.
7
so
books.
I wrote
books.
7 when I... This is what 30 years ago when I was in my really young days.
Are they in English?
I don't know whether all that is recorded. Sorry for all this mess.
That's okay.
That's great. I love it.
No. But if you want to, I'd love to stay in contact with you. f.proctor@mzmedia.com. Okay. f.proctor@mzmedia.com. And with that in mind, my gosh.
Wow, that's so cool. Thank you, Carla. A dog named Frank. I'm not going to forget that. Okay. Thank you, everybody. Boy, that hour went fast.
Did it ever.
It's a busy time of year. We've got so much going on. So thank you, everybody. Good questions, great tips from some of our callers. Thank you, Frank, for being here.
Holy.
And Sebastian.
Bacillus thuringiensis.
See you all again next week.
This has been an exclusive podcast of The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin. Heard every Saturday morning at 9 on Zoomer Radio, the new AM 740. This has been an exclusive podcast of The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin. Heard every Saturday morning at 9 on Zoomer Radio, the new AM 740.
This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show.